who are we? We're creatures of the earth, we're beings of the earth. And once we fully acknowledge that and embrace it and enjoy it, it'll be so much easier to be human and enjoy being human and connecting with other humans and animals.
Today, I'm thrilled to introduce Lana Shea, a lifelong advocate for holistic living and cognitive liberty. Lana's passion is igniting human potential through embodiment practices, holistic lifestyle choices, and exploration with plant medicine and entheogens. She's a seasoned leader in dance, yoga, and movement, and a profound voice in the tantric art. Lana is also a number one best-selling author, and her latest book, Erotic Hustle, Redefining Sin Through Sacred Sexuality and Psychedelics, delves into her unique journey as an exotic dancer and her dedication to mindfulness. She's also a co-founder of Entheo Ventures, a consulting firm for psychedelic companies. Tune in as we delve into Lana's fascinating world, from her first ayahuasca experience to bringing mindfulness to strip clubs to honoring what is sacred within, slowing down and reconnecting with nature and our senses. Enjoy and see you on the other side. Welcome, Lana, to Leadershipadelics. It's a pleasure to have you here today. I would do an intro right now, but I was looking at your bio and there's so much to remember. You've done so much. You're such an accomplished woman, and it's impressive. So I'll record the intro later. But I want to welcome you on this beautiful day, beautiful here, and I hope beautiful down in California where you are as well.
It is actually incredible here today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I heard you had some crazy weather recently, and I'm glad it's like getting to the spring and
sunshine
and what you went there for, or what a lot of people are there for.
Right. It always balances out. I think it's still one of the best climates in the world.
Yeah. Now I do want to call out that, you know, you're a published author. You just published Erotic Hustle, Redefining Sin Through Sacred Sexuality and Psychedelics. Love the title. And you just published the audiobook as well for it. And there's so much I want to talk about, but just knowing that you're a published author, first, what is your book about? Let's start there.
Yeah. My book is my memoir, and it's a story about my life, the beginning, and how I got into the sex industry, and then how psychedelics came into play and tantric arts. And then the end of the book, and I guess the whole book, actually, the underlying message is a call to action for sex workers and people in that industry to claim their power to do something really revolutionary in the world.
Yeah. And so how did the psychedelics come into the story? How did that happen in your life, in your journey, since it's your memoir?
Yeah, psychedelics came in much earlier than the stripping and the sex work. Yeah. I was experimenting with psychedelics when I was 14, 15. I definitely wasn't working in a gentleman's club then. But they played a bigger role, and there was more intentional therapeutic use. I'd say my early or mid 20s. And I'd say that was marked by my first ayahuasca journey.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big one. And I detailed that in the book, and how the visions were completely related to my work in the sex industry and feminine power and.
Yeah.
My reproductive system. There's a lot there.
Yeah. Can you share some of that ceremony, some of those insights that, you know, give us a glimpse of that painting, that how that played out?
Yeah. I've learned now, though I didn't know my first time, that I don't need 3 cups for anybody who has drank ayahuasca and sat in ceremony. It is a powerful brew, and sometimes you need so little. And that's just kind of how I lead my life anyways, which I don't know why that didn't come into play in that moment, but I don't need very much. But at that point, the first time that I sat, I had 3 cups. So that's a lot. They're like little shot glasses when I say 3 cups for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah. For people watching, I've got one ayahuasca cup here, and this is a big one.
This is a big one.
But, you know, so it's a little bit, this is about 2 cups. So 3 cups is a lot.
Yeah, especially for someone who doesn't like a lot of anything ever in life in general. But okay, needless to say, I was in deep in the experience, and I thought about, as I do often, my interactions in gentlemen's clubs and the just every individual I would interact with, and started getting these messages as I was thinking about it. And the words were, you know, your body is sacred, your yoni is sacred, sexuality is sacred. And anyone who enters you, and we're talking about lovemaking or sex, should be in reverence and literally bow to you, and vice versa. So if you're going to have that interaction with somebody, have reverence. It's so sacred. And then yeah. I saw there was a portal opening up inside of myself, like through my womb, and there were crystals and like all of these sacred geometries and fractals and wow. rainbows. And it was just like this really beautiful portal into what started as like a castle. I saw a woman in some grand attire opening the doors of this castle, and then I entered and it turned into this beautiful cave with, you know, sparkles and crystals. But it was just a really beautiful vision. And the message was very clear that it's very important to honor this really powerful energy that is sexual energy, because it's the energy that creates the universe, that yeah. as we know it, everything, it creates life. It's who we are.
How do you, I mean, this is so beautiful. How do you contrast that? So you had your experience in gentlemen's clubs, and then you had this experience, and then you go back to your life. How do you reconcile the two? Because I mean, there's how you feel, how you perceive it, and that's the people, the patrons, the gentlemen that come in the club, how they're perceiving it and their energy. How do you work that out?
It's a good question. It's challenging to walk through life upholding all of that, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, a lot of us do that. You know, it's not just, you know, in this situation, but it's like you've got that tension of like, especially after doing medicine, of like, wow, this is who we are as humans. And there's all that beauty and love and subtlety and warmth and then, you know, I don't know what gentleman's club you were at, but it's a completely different environment. It's like loud music, intense, you know, like boom, you know, it's like, how do you move forward there?
I know, it's such a juxtaposition, right? Like we have like sitting in ceremony with ayahuasca where everything's just like so divine and, you know, surreal, and then you walk into like this dirty, grimy, dark, like fleshy. It's so, I don't know, I guess I'm a bit of an extremist that I was able to walk through life like that. Okay, like I'm gonna go sit in ceremony this week with ayahuasca, you know, in the redwoods, like in Northern California. Everything's so, you know, pristine and picturesque, and then the next week I'm going to walk into a gentleman's club. And somehow that worked for me. But that was my work. That was my passion, to be able to merge and fuse yeah. those two and bring that energy and bring those the redwoods. We were talking about this before we started our recording today, but bring that energy into the club. And I do also want to make clear, when I was just speaking about sex work and actual sex and love making, as I worked in the sex industry, I wasn't actually working in it as an escort. Like I never worked as somebody who yeah. was offered money for sex. I was specifically an exotic dancer. I did do some dominatrix work and other things like that. Yeah. But I just want to make that part clear, because I think it still confuses a lot of people if you're not in that industry. Yeah. So I didn't actually get to practice that part, where I'm, you know, giving that transmission to people that I'm actually love making. I only had that with my partner. Just wanted to clarify that part.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it became my practice, bringing that energy from ceremony and from my journeys with plant medicines and psychedelics into the darkness. Because for me, that's the light. It's the light work. But then I started to see how sex work is also light work. And that was fun for me.
Yeah. How was that received? Like when you did you like take all the other exotic dancers the next weekend to an ayahuasca ceremony? Or like how did that start changing the dynamics? And I'm hoping I can go there, and you know it's because it sounds exciting, like an exciting journey, bringing the light in the darkness and spreading the light. And I think it also shows a lot of strength and resilience on your part to be able to reconcile the two. And you know, I want to applaud you for that, because I know, you know, ayahuasca, what it makes you feel, the sensitivity it creates, and being able to go back and work in intense environments after that, you have to be very strong.
Thank you for that. And I love this question. So I jokingly call a lot of the women that I spend my time with in the club and just my circle of friends, I call them the ayahuasca strippers.
There you go.
There is a group of women that I started to connect with, and we just wove together around, I think it was around right after I drank ayahuasca, but or 2015. And the group just keeps growing, actually. It's so incredible. There's so many women who work in strip clubs, but they're like in the back before they go out in their lingerie and stilettos, like pulling cards and like burning sage.
I was going to ask you that. As you like, do you smudge the club before and after?
It was much easier. So I had this really, really beautiful experience. So I worked in, you know, we all know California is like this very special place in the world. So I worked in the San Francisco Bay in this tiny little club, and it was in Sunnyvale. I don't know if anyone listening knows of Sunnyvale, or if you know of Sunnyvale. It's like, you know, the heart of Silicon Valley there. Like I was living like basically in Palo Alto and working like so strange, just to add another bizarre element to this. So since it was a small club, it was easier to sort of like infiltrate, if I can put it that way. And I was literally smudging the back room. And some of the girls were like, oh my God, something's burning. Or like the manager would run back, the owner, like, why are you burning something again? You can't burn stuff back here. And I'm like, you don't understand. I can't breathe because these girls keep spraying their like toxic, like Victoria's Secret love spell spray, or like, you know, their synthetic designer sprays. And I'm like, I can't breathe. Like, I can't work like this. I have to burn the Palo Santo or the stage, whatever. And eventually people started asking for it. Like the girls would say, oh, can you do that thing with the smoke? Because I'm feeling off today. And I know when you do that, like I feel better. And things started happening. And then I started serving them all combo.
Wow.
There was probably like 10, maybe more girls that had... It was so silly. I was calling it my cult, but in a good way, because I like to like put a positive spin on things that are like taboo.
Yeah.
It's one of the other fun things I like to do. So I have this like same combo marking that I put on all the girls. We all had the same. We all had the same combo points, and I would call it my combo cult. And we all thought it was silly, but we'd, you know, proudly wear it to the club. And that would obviously... customers would come in and say, you know, what the hell is on your arm? Did something bite you? We'd have to explain what combo was, and imagine like what was happening in that club. Like all these girls had combo. We were like burning Palo Santo. I started playing like ceremony music when I was dancing on stage.
Wow. This is like a whole new format here. I'm like, wow. You and we've talked about that before. It's like I was going to say you need more of those clubs with that energy. But you know, before we get there, because I'm also interested to get there. Like, how did that change the life in the club for your friends there, and even for like people who showed up?
Yeah, I don't completely know how it changed things for the people who showed up, but I can tell you about one circumstance. There was one customer that I met in Las Vegas when I was working there, but he actually lived in the Bay Area. It was so funny. I'd travel all the way to Vegas from the Bay Area to work, and I'd keep meeting Bay Area people. It's just like we're little magnets, you know? And he happened to be on MDMA when I met him in Vegas, and we spent time together in VIP. And I was so excited. I get so excited when I meet people on MDMA in the club, because I'm like, okay, this is the experience that I want to have. And this is the experience I want to give you. Like, yay. MDMA is also very much my medicine. So I sat with him, and it was more like I know I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm not a psychedelic psychotherapist, but it was structured that way. So we went into an hour-long session, and it was our own, you know, gentleman's club psychedelic psychotherapy session. And he was drinking Red Bull, I remember. And I said, okay, I'm a health coach. And I said, okay, we have to put that Red Bull down. You can't have that anymore.
I was going to be like, I was like, wow, Red Bull and MDMA. And it's
no, this poor guy. I'm like, okay. And now we're going to order you water. And he was trying to order alcohol. And I said, no, we're getting water. And you're going to have like five of these before you leave. And then I started telling him, okay, I think it would be good for you to just eat some mushrooms and go into the redwoods by yourself. And we had this whole crazy conversation. Okay, it was years and years. Like, I never saw him, you know, after that, because
my... he got lost in the redwood.
He did that, and then we lost him. No, my agreement with my... I was married at the time. I had been married for 7-8 years at that time, and our agreement was no exchanging of phone numbers or anything like that. So I didn't. But 6 years later, I was working at this... the ayahuasca stripper club in the Bay. And he actually came in and found me and said, you know, I sought you out and I wanted to find you and let you know that that was a pivotal moment for me and that changed my life. And I actually did go into the woods and eat mushrooms, and I'm a teacher. So the way that shaped my life, that experience in the woods with the mushrooms and the MDMA in the club, changed the way that I communicate with my students and our dynamic, and it's, you know, changed my life for the better. Wow. So I don't know how it worked for everyone, but I can tell you there was that experience, and hopefully there was many more of just this, you know, all right, we're going to talk about real things and we're going to talk about psychedelics, and I'm not going to let you drink alcohol while we're in our session together. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, some people would take it. Some people would say, you're fucking crazy. Some people would take it and run with it, you know?
Oh, that's wonderful. When you do that work, a lot of your energy is flowing out. Like you're freely giving that energy something that is very, very sacred. How have you helped yourself and kind of other workers kind of protect themselves to retain that sacred energy as you do the work?
That's a big one. And it's a never-ending practice. And I think not even just working in a gentleman's club, just life in general. If you're working with a lot of people or you're doing really heavy emotional work, I can imagine like the legitimate psychedelic psychotherapist, the level of, you know, self-care that they need. And I think that's just what it is. Simply, what are your self-care practices? Those were my practices that kept me going. And my brand is The Pure Way, P-U-R-E, as in purity. And that is really how I maintain and protect as well. Not that we need to be protected. I think there's something there that can be unpacked, but that's a whole nother thing. Those self-care practices allow you to circulate that energy, and also the tantric practices. And it doesn't need to be a sexual thing. You know, if you're able to open up a channel with the people that you have in front of you, as opposed to just like giving it all and it not coming back to you, there's a way to actually circulate it so that you're not just getting drained, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a good, yeah. And I remember like the, I like you comparing this to, you know, like therapy and any type of work where it's easy to give. And it's part of the work to give. I remember the retreat we held in October. I was drained after, you know, it was 12 days. And after 12 days, I was like, oh my God, like I loved every moment of it. It was wonderful. But sometimes you also lose yourself into the giving. And, you know, like it's learning how to, that flow that you're talking about, I think is really important. And I'm still learning, like, you know, you're talking, it's never ending work, because love that. And so, you know, from the, what do you call it? The ayahuasca strip club? Was that how what you called it?
I also call it like Disneyland for strippers, because there wasn't actually any alcohol there. And there was no contact because it was fully nude. And there were no private rooms. And obviously, like I said, I was playing like medicine music. So it was very much like Disneyland for me.
Now, one of the things we talked about is how you were thinking about taking some of those learnings, right? I don't know if you can share that, but like if you had a vision of maybe expanding that to rebuild how people think about strip clubs, or, you know, like change that image that people have of them.
Yeah, definitely. I have this vision, which I put also into my book, of like the conscious strip club. And I wish there was a better way to say it, but that's the easiest way to convey it. And it's just people walking out better than they walked in. Maybe they have a deeper sense of altruism, or they're more connected to themselves, or, you know, they feel lighter, they feel healthier. And obviously that's a big thing for me. Yes, I'm going to continue telling people to like put down the Red Bull and stop drinking alcohol and, you know, go eat mushrooms in the woods. Yeah, I think the women coming in with a lot of integrity is a big part of it, of course, you know, and really acknowledging and understanding the power that there is in this sexual energy, and really using it in a beneficial way as opposed to manipulation, because that's so much of what this world is, right? We use like sex for manipulation, like in marketing and like all angles, especially in the sex industry, of course. Like, you know, that's what women are told they're supposed to do as a stripper. You know, okay, you're sexy, so like get as much money as you can with that. Which is, yes, it's work. It's still, there's still capitalism. It's still, that's how it's set up. But how can we do it in a way that's ethical and that everybody benefits?
Yeah. And what would be kind of the experience as somebody walks in there? Like, how would it play out?
Yeah, there's so many different visions I've had. I was actually like writing it before.
Okay, sorry. Maybe it's too early. I'm happy to come back, and you know, because I think it's a beautiful vision, and I hope you get the support you need to manifest it, because it sounds so much healthier than what's there today. That. You know, I'm not as familiar as you are, but I feel, you know, just from talking here, it's like, wow, there's this user opportunity to completely flip it around and bring a wellness aspect to it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I can this isn't my idea. This is something from ancient times, but, you know, Dakini temples, the idea of like the wounded warrior coming back from battle and going into this place where there are Dakinis or women who are well versed in the tantric arts and, you know, conscious energetic exchange and sensuality, and they're empowered and embodied, and they're welcoming these men in and saying, okay, this is how you can be with a woman. This is how you touch a woman. This is how you interact with a woman. And also, this is how we honor you and have reverence for you and, like, you know, get you into your most strong divine masculine state so that you can go and continue taking on the world. And then we have that mutual support. So this is not my idea. This is like ancient Dakini temples. And I think resurrecting them is, it's our only option.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. And I think there's a lot of that need right now. There's a lot of tension and pressure, and I think people need connection. I think there's a lot of people feeling alone. We're also forgetting who we are as humans. And I think that's a big thing, you know, reflecting on what we talked about before, but you're really about, I love it, unlocking the optimal human potential. And so what the next question is, who are we as humans? From your perspective, who are we?
I was going to laugh because the first thing that came to mind was when I was hanging out with my friend a few days ago, and they were saying, so, you know, you can like make yourself sound like an animal. Like I can make myself sound like a cat or like bark. You're like, who are we as humans? And I talk about it. But I'm like, you know, we forget that we actually are animals and that we are from the earth and we are of the earth. And I think that's the major, that's like the point of tension with humans right now, is like where we don't acknowledge that we really came from the earth and that we're of the earth and that we need to interact with it and honor it and tread lightly on it and interact with it and utilize it to really become our optimal selves. And what did you say? Unlocking human potential, just like optimal, like being in our optimal state. And that's why I was also referencing my brand, The Pure Way, earlier, because we get confused and think we need all of this, all of these things that we've created that are not of the earth, and like, chemicals that we've created are like, I just, my mind went to like women injecting Botox, and it's like, no, if you're actually really living in a holistic way and really, really caring for your body properly and putting the right things in, on, and around it, you actually wouldn't need the Botox. And also, you know, that's our discomfort with aging and all of that, but we would all age a lot more gracefully if we weren't polluting ourselves in the earth.
Amen. Yeah.
So, yeah. Who are we? We're creatures of the earth. We're beings of the earth. And once we fully acknowledge that and embrace it and enjoy it, it'll be so much easier to be human and enjoy being human and connecting with other humans and animals.
Yeah. Now we tend to disconnect ourselves from the earth and also from our food as well. I mean, it's all kind of interconnected, and it's sad, and it's more and more. But I think the more we're going to get disconnected, the more there's going to be people looking for that connection as well. So it's going to, I'm hopeful it will balance itself out. And not turn into like a Wally like future, where, you know, everybody's on like, I don't know, chairs watching holograms and moving around a spaceship. That it's scary sometimes, you know, when I see all the advancements, and, you know, I play with them. I play with the AI. I play with all that technology. I see it as a tool, but at the same time, it's like, oh, I love going to the, we have some land and working with the earth, getting my hands dirty, getting my tractor stuck in the mud and trying to figure out how to get out of there. But like, you know, those are the things where it's like, you got to do that. You got to, you know, this is part of living life. You can't abstract everything. There's another aspect that we've had in our discussions, which is working with the subtle. And I think it's something, you know, whether you're talking about the tantric arts or, you know, senses, or we talked about that before. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, about how you approach working in subtlety, maybe you have private and you have classes, but also just in life in general. And you've touched on that a little bit.
Yeah, this is a big one. The first thing that came to mind is this term that's used a lot in practicing tantric arts, and that's resensitization. And because of the way that we live so fast and hard and stressed out, we get desensitized. And the subtle is so important because it's, you know, completely gone from so many people's lives. Things have to be so intense for people to even feel anything. Yeah. And not just on a physical level, but an emotional level. And especially like you were just talking about technology and whatnot, there are so many, I'm not a scientist in this way, so I'm just going to come from my own experience and thinking about my own little sister who's 18 and she's constantly on her phone. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she's so disconnected from her own senses and own emotions. Like it just kind of numbs you. And I do remember reading at some point that staring at a screen long enough gives you, it has an opiate effect on your brain. Like it numbs you, it distorts you. So many of us are constantly staring at screens. I mean, I am as well, like doing my work on the computer. I'm sure you stare at a screen too. We all do, like our phones. And it's desensitizing us, but also like the driving in cars and honking and loud noises and not doing that good work that you were just referencing, like getting your hands in the dirt and getting your tractor stuck in the mud. These are natural, normal things for humans. And like, going really slow, like driving in a car is not actually natural. Like our body going 80 miles per hour. Yeah. If you do that and drive across the country and you pay attention, you feel like shit. It doesn't feel good. Why? Because it's not normal. Yeah. I mean, being in a plane, people would travel a lot. I've been in planes a lot lately and I just feel, if I really tune in, I feel like jittery. I feel unbalanced, ungrounded. So this subtle is just tuning into that subtle awareness and noticing where we're off balance. And then you can find much easier where to get in balance and where the connection points are and where the health is. If you notice what's out of balance in that subtle level. There's so much there. I could go on.
Yeah. Oh, you can go on, please. I was going to say, how do you get, you know, if somebody, how do you get people started? Like, are there some, you know, exercises you could share that could help people, you know, get reconnected? You know, pick anyone, either as an individual, as a couple, or, you know, anything that, you know, you is kind of your go-to exercise and kind of help people get resensitized to the subtle, whether there's psychedelics involved or not.
Well, that's like always the best route, in my opinion.
Because that one always works. I gotta say,
always works. Like, can't go wrong with that one. We know that for a fact. It's like, okay,
so without.
Yeah, if you really just want to figure it all out, just go eat some mushrooms in the woods. Like, I don't need to tell you anything else. Et voila. That might not always be an option for everyone. So we could take an even more subtle route, because that is not the subtle route. We know that for sure. Okay. Like taking psychedelics, like a real dose of anything, that's like the that's like the big wham. It does work, though. It gets you tuned into the subtle.
Oh, yeah.
When you're on, you know, you've eaten some mushrooms, you notice every little thing.
Oh, we talked about that. We talked about eating food, tasting food. We're getting sidetracked, but that's an interesting one. It's like tasting food on mushrooms and just holding a bite in your mouth and just feeling it decompose. Oh, and keeping it as long as you want. That's wonderful. You got something to say.
Well, that's perfect, actually. You went right into it. That is one of the practices. That's it. And you don't need to be on mushrooms to do it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we got there when we were speaking a while ago, because my old brand, my label that I put on myself was the sensual foodist, because I was all about like the sensual experience of eating. It is so like, it can be erotic, but it's like very sensual. And you can make it that way, or you can just like shovel your food in your mouth really fast and not think about it the way that we do life usually, you know? Or we can really slow down and like notice all of the subtle nuances of eating. Like, how does the texture feel in your mouth? Or it really works well with, you know, real food. Fortunately, we're in two wonderful places in the world where it's easy to access. You know, you go to a farmer's market and you get something that was just, you know, a strawberry that was just picked, mm-hmm. and it's super fresh, hasn't gone into a refrigerator.
Yes, thank you.
I change food.
I keep having that argument at home. I was like, please don't give me a fruit from the fridge. I need it at room temperature because I lose all the taste if it goes in the fridge, and everybody looks at me like I'm crazy. I'm like,
I love this. I have this conversation all the time. Oh my gosh. I think being from France has really put you in a different position, though. Like, you have some wisdom that a lot of people who grew up in America will never have. It's one of my favorite countries because of that, because I would go to the markets when I was there and go get the really fresh produce, or even fresh bread, fresh meat, cheese, whatever it is, and put it on the counter and eat it how it's supposed to be eaten without, you know, I don't know the science behind it. I wish that I could retain it, but people can go look it up, what the refrigerator does to your food. It actually does damage it. It turns it into like totally different thing. So just, you know, that like pure unadulterated right off the vine, is when you can really have that experience of, the senses interacting with whatever it is, and the subtle, you know, like what is the flavor? What are the different flavors and the different areas of your tongue? Like, you know, really utilize the palate that we have. We don't fully utilize our senses. It's so silly. We have this beautiful, amazing body that we live in that can do so many things and experience so much pleasure. And we're always just like scratching the surface. It's like, wow, there's like an entire universe to explore in here. And we're just like not using it.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to being disconnected. You know, you mentioned that earlier. We are disconnected. And I think it probably makes it easier. I'm not going to go into a conspiracy theory, but it makes it easier for marketing to, you know, because then they can just marketing black and white is a lot easier than marketing a grayscale. You know, whether you're a president running for election, if you go black and white, it's a lot easier than if you're like trying to be smart and go for a grayscale. Same for marketing, same for everything. So like we're taught to just work within the black and white confines when there's this beautiful rainbow scale, and it's just like, please, people, like, you know, just see all the colors and slow the heck down. It's funny. I had a mushroom ceremony where I reconnected with the slowness of French eating. Because in France, when we eat, the meals are like 2 hours long. And as a kid, it drove me crazy because I just wanted to go run around. And so I was doing this mushroom ceremony. And I was like, you know, and for people watching, I'm holding my cup of tea. And I was just like, you know, why do I feel the need to go from point A to point B and stick it straight in my mouth right away? It's like, I can settle at every point of the way and really appreciate that moment. And then when I take a sip, I can settle there. I don't have to jump to the next moment of wanting to swallow it. I don't have to jump to, you know. And it was the most wonderful ceremony because, you know, then I applied that to everything else afterward. We had strawberries. We had, you know, my wife had made some excellent soup, which, you know, I totally enjoyed. But yeah, no, and we're not taught that anymore. Like, you know, it's, you know, you're, and good luck me trying to teach that to my kids, you know, like, because they're probably moving even faster than I was moving for my dad. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it's moving faster and faster. You know, the other thing, I'm sorry if I'm getting in my soapbox here, but
it's fantastic.
I love this. you know, but the other thing is, you know, social media, for example, and I have to deal with social media. This is part of how I market the podcast and everything. But I feel like I'm Willy Wonka. Meaning, like, it's all about making the best candy, and it's all about increasing the amount of sugar in candy. It's like, how much sugar can you stick in that post? It's funny because the other day I saw, like, Mr. Beast created a Willy Wonka candy factory. He's like the ultimate Willy Wonka, this dude. Like, everything he creates is like a giant candy bar for our, you know, like, addicted to the social media candy. And so now I'm using some AI to make even more candy. And it's like, I'm like, what the heck is going on? We're all eating candy. That's not helping being in the nuance there. But deep conversations like we're having, unfortunately, they're not the ones that do the best on social media. They're, you know, they're I love having them, and I think they're really important for the people that they touch and the people that are able to connect with them. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that topic. Oh, maybe, yeah.
That's a phenomenal analogy. I love it, especially because we all know that sugar is the worst drug ever. The most, like, socially acceptable. We have cigarettes and we have alcohol and whatever, but then there's sugar. And sugar is 8 times more addictive than cocaine. And when you think, like, I think people are better off doing cocaine than having sugar. Honestly, I have no problem saying that. Yeah, so it was a great analogy for me. I really love that one.
Yeah, I just came up with that the other day. I was like, wow, I just keep working on increasing the amount of sugar in the post I do. Because if I don't do that, I don't get people's intention. Because just like sugar, over the years, people's, like, taste bud has changed. So you need to put more and more and more and more and more and more in order to compete in the marketplace. It's like, it's, you know, it's an interesting challenge. But, you
know, there's so much competition for our attention on a screen.
Yeah.
Like, the whole world is competing for our attention 24/7. So intense. And it's like, who has the most sugar? Who's going to get me addicted so I pay attention?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and my kids know what makes good sugar on social media. Like, I'm talking with my 14-year-old, and I was like, hey, you know, if you want, I'll help you start a YouTube channel, you know, so you can do something creative. But he's like, he knows exactly what's going to work, what's not going to work. Like, yeah, I'm like, wow, like, you grew up in that. I didn't. But, you know, I hope they can reconnect with the nature, with, you know, like, stick the computer away, go to some place where you don't have cell phone connection. I mean, go to some place where your cell phone falls apart. I don't know. It's like, it disintegrates. And you're left, you know, to just take care of yourself and camp. Mm-hmm. And enjoy your campfire. Do you do anything with campfires?
Well, Yes, actually, not on a regular basis, but I love what you were saying right before that and that whole stream of consciousness and your cell phone falling apart because I didn't mean to, but I knew that I needed it after Burning Man in 2019. I was going through this whole transition in my life, leaving my 11-year marriage, and I ended up moving to Costa Rica by mistake, but also I guess it was fate.
How do you move to Costa Rica by mistake? It's like, oops, I didn't mean to get on that plane, but I guess I'll stay in here.
It's a great question. How do you move to Costa Rica by mistake? Let me tell you how. So it was in 2020. So I cheated, you know, in the best way possible. I went there in the beginning of 2020 and there was an announcement, the border's closing. And if you don't leave now, you might get stuck here for God knows how long. The world might end. You might just be stuck here forever. And in my head, I'm always prepared for something crazy. And I'm just like, the world's ending. I'm stuck in Costa Rica. So all my American friends are hopping on flights leaving because the border's closing. And I'm like, what? Why are you getting on a flight and leaving this place to go back there? That is not where I want to be when the world ends. When shit hits the fan, I want to be in a waterfall for sure, in the jungle, in the tropics, like eating papaya off a tree. Okay, yeah. That's what I want.
Talking my language here, be in the waterfall. It's like that's the picture on my YouTube channel. I'm like in the waterfall.
Waterfalls are everything. So I ended up with my partner at the time, his family, they're guardians of the tallest waterfall in southern Costa Rica. So that's where I spent 2020, you know, like hiking up that waterfall in the cave behind it. And my phone did kind of fall apart. Everything fell apart there. Costa Rica is a place where everything falls apart, like cars, clothes. Your body will do great, but anything that's man-made or not natural, it's just going to be eaten by the jungle. It takes, you know, a day.
The moisture of the jungle is...
The moisture, everything. The jungle just eats everything. Yeah. I'm just like, how did this turn into dust? It was just like sitting on a shelf, you know, like just the jungle eats it or the insects, you know, whatever it is. It just, all of my electronics turned to crap there. Like my computer, I got rid of it. It was just, there were so many bugs inside of it. little microscopic organisms. It's actually something I would recommend for everyone on this planet. Like go live in the jungle for, you know, 3 months to 10 years and just like... It was the best reset that I've ever had in my entire life. Like my nervous system literally just like smoothed out. Like it felt like I was, you know, riding a cloud for a year. It's truly the best reset button for anyone.
Can you describe a typical morning there? Just to take me there and our audience just for a few minutes so we can dream a little bit if we can't make it anytime soon.
All right. So I had a very unique experience. I don't know if everybody's going to do this. You can set it up. But my former partner's family were, like I said, the guardians of the tallest waterfall. There's a cave up there and they take people on tours to the cave. And at the base of the waterfall, they call it base camp, there's a wooden platform with a mattress on it and a bug net over that. And that's all it is. So I was sleeping. Yeah.
Do you have pictures?
I do.
Oh, you should send me a few pictures. I'll put them up on the video.
Absolutely. Perfect. So I would sleep on this wooden platform there were no walls, just a wooden platform. I mean, it was terrifying at times. There was a tarantula in the bed. There was a snake in the bed. There were cockroaches in the bed. You know, it was completely open to all the elements. So I would go to sleep with the sound of the crickets and the cicadas, and it was loud. And I don't sleep even in a home, in a really beautiful, nice home, and the nicest homes I've ever been in, the nicest locations. I can't sleep without white noise. I am just accustomed to, I mean, if there were a fire or a waterfall or rain, the crickets and cicadas were great. That's, I slept so well there. We are meant to sleep like this. We evolved to sleep like this. Yeah. The white noise is good. Pink noise, brown noise. You can get really deep into it. There's all these different types of noise. I actually have to sleep with pink noise playing to sleep at night, every single night. But I think that it really came from being in Costa Rica. So I'd fall asleep like that. When I'd wake up to sunlight, because as soon as it got light, it was hot. As soon as there was that heat of the sun, that would wake you up. And there were howler monkeys. So I would hear this like really deep. If you've never heard a howler monkey, you're going to have to look it up and listen. It is so intense. They are the most intense creatures. It sounds like someone's being attacked, but after a while it's like pleasurable to hear.
Is it like a deep monkey noise or sharp, high, or
deep okay. And super loud. And I think howler monkeys might actually be the loudest monkeys on the planet. I have to fact check that, but they're loud, and it felt like they're right in my ear, but they're not. They're like, you know, way up in the treetops, you know, 50, 60 feet far away. So I'd wake up to howler monkeys, and then cows, and like the cows mooing, and then the chickens. So I'd hear all of this nature and life, and the birds. Oh my gosh, the tropical birds. You know, there were toucans, and toucans actually are terrible noise as well. But after a while, you start to love it. And it would also be really incredible to wake up and it would be raining. I love tropical rain. It's just like the most magnificent sound and feeling. I love rain. So I'd wake up like that, sunshine.
There was a net, just a mosquito net on top of you? So if it rains, it's raining on you and you're feeling every drop.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a really beautiful way to wake up there. And then we'd get up and stop by a little stand and get fresh coconuts and be hydrated, and then get fruit that was just growing, like, you know, it was so close. And I'd feel, I was so nourished there. My skin was happier. My hair was happier. I didn't wear shoes. I really messed up my feet actually that year, but I didn't wear shoes most of the year. Because I loved just getting my feet in the mud or on the earth. And you know, there's so much science behind that. It's worth looking into that as well. If you never have and you're listening to this, just the benefit for the body. Any inflammation in the body is significantly reduced just by having your bare feet on the earth for a good amount of time. And we all have some level of inflammation, just like, you know, living a normal human life.
Wow. Would you, that platform you were on, was it surrounded by water? Would you like have to like take a swim?
Such a good question. It was just like surrounded by mud, actually. I would just have to like make a very like sticky walk to the platform and get my shoes off before I walked up the stairs. And
so you get your mud treatment as well.
Gosh, I was always muddy, but the whole year, always like my clothes were always damp and my shoes were always muddy. And after a while, it's not good for the body to be damp that much. You can get like, you know, infections and things like that. But for the amount of time I was there, it was incredible.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm like, okay, I think a few people listening to that are like, we're going to Costa Rica right now and finding those falls. I'll put some pictures up in the video if you share them, because I think a lot of people will be like, oh wow, this looks wonderful. So what's next for you? I mean, you've just done the audiobook. You know, we're coming up at time, and I'd love to talk more, but now I need to look at looking forward together. Where are you going next? What are you doing?
That is a good question. I'm like, where am I going? Where are we all going? So there's this like existential thing once you start, you know, journeying with psychedelics. It's like this huge question of where are we going, right? It's not like, Yeah, I plan to like move up in my career. Like, you know, it's such a big thing, right? I am co-creating some events that are starting to look like the Conscious Strip Club. Yeah. There's one coming up in Miami that I'm co-creating soon. And everything that I do, of course, has that. It's always going to run in that same vein of getting people more connected to themselves and more connected to each other. And of course, the whole pure way, like I just want people to be more connected to the earth and live healthier lives and experience more pleasure by living a healthier, more holistic life. So I'll be creating some courses, putting some things out about how to just like take better care of your body and the earth and, you know, how to find healthy food while you're traveling. It's such a crazy thing. It's hard to maintain optimal health as we move around this crazy planet, right? Like I was in the airport the other day and it said farm to air on this store. And I go in and I'm like, farm, you're going to be so bold to put farm on your store, like farm to air. I go in and there's like gummy bears and Doritos. And I'm just like, this is a lie.
It's from the Dorito tree and the gummy bear tree.
I was like, where's the farm? You, this is false advertising. I was so upset. I was like, oh my God, farm to air? Not, there was not even one piece of produce in that shop. Mm. I was like, this is a lie. I mean, really, honestly, I'd love to have legit farm to air places in every single airport. That would be a great endeavor. If anybody wants to join me on getting real farm food in the airports. I have so many aspirations in that way. I'm just like, can we just get like back to the farm? Can more people go to the farmer's market? So yeah, that's part of what I'll be doing in the future, getting more people to the farmer's market, getting more people more connected to themselves, eating slower, loving the earth more, getting their bare feet on the earth. And eating mushrooms in the redwoods.
That's wonderful. Yeah, well, that's always a good thing. Yeah, I can totally see you also doing like workshops and lectures and group meetings like around the country. Like you have so much to share, you know, as you were talking, I was like, you know, you do classes. I was reading, you know, in your bio, you mentioned that. I'm like, how big can you make those classes? Like how many people can you touch at the same time? Because there's a lot to share there, you know, and I think a lot of people need to hear that. That message, and you know, it's like it's this Tony Robbins, and but you know there could be Lana Shea, you know, not that, yeah, you know, and yeah, he's awesome. I love that there was that Netflix special. I'm Not Your Guru. I watched it multiple times, and I was like, oh my God, that's he's really good, but I can totally see you putting something like that together too.
Thank you. And I love that you called him in because I've been following Tony for years. I've gone to like 30 of his events. So.
Oh, there you go. That's wonderful. So it's just a natural growth. And, you know, I envision it. Give it a few years. It will unfold itself. You know, that's another thing with psychedelics. You touched on that. It's like it teaches you to be more in the present. And so in the society, we're always taught, you know, think with the end in mind, you know, what are your goals or this, that's that. And when you deal with psychedelics, it makes you question that. It makes you like, why is it so important that I always think about the end goal when there's like so much in the present moment? And so I've come to the habit of talking about natural unfoldment and the ability to nudge that. And also kind of appreciate that natural unfoldment. And it sounds like, you know, you're doing a lot of that too, where you're letting things unfold. And you're not getting too ahead of yourself, like, you know, trying to be Tony Robbins right away. But at the same time, I can totally see unfolding in a beautiful way.
I appreciate that reflection. Thank you.
You're welcome. Was there anything else? Now we're coming up at time. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about or questions you had for me?
Oh my gosh. There's so much. There are so many threads throughout this conversation that I'm like, can we go into that for like a week?
Oh, I'm happy. For a week.
It's so good. I think that one conversation that we had, but we touched upon it, was really meaningful for me. And that was just like, we were talking about the senses and food and slowing down. And, you know, I think that's a really easy entry point for a lot of people. So I want to highlight that because we all eat and we're all going to continue to eat. So instead of, you know, this whole huge for people who are not ready for that, but I imagine most people who are listening to this podcast are like, they have some interest in psychedelics, you know, that whole like, okay, you know, go eat 3 grams of mushrooms and go in the woods. That's so like, it's such a hard, like baseball bat, like, okay, let's focus on what's really tangible for everybody. And that's just like taking a moment to really slow down, like give yourself the gift in this like fast paced, crazy world where we're like going at light speed, what feels like light speed right now. Just slow down and see what you can feel and notice like the subtleties. Maybe just eating food, like go to the farmer's market and buy yourself something that hasn't gone in the fridge yet. You'll see why we like it better.
From farmer's market to table without passing through the fridge, please. That's beautiful. And the slowing down, it's funny. We have a little ritual here in our family. I call it the 10 breath of silence that we do before eating a meal. And I started this many years ago with the kids, and I think they probably think I'm crazy, but they do it. We do it together. But the idea is like, instead of saying prayer, some people can say prayer, some people can say grace. And there's tons of benefit from that because it actually forces you to slow down. And so the 10 breath of silence is to really acknowledge your space and time where you are now, that you're getting ready to eat a meal that has been prepared by someone, and honoring that. And, you know, if somebody wants to say something, that's great. But I also like the breath because it helps you slow down before the meal. And it's so important because we think the solution to succeeding in society is finding ways to stuff more things into our day. And that only creates more problems. And I see it everywhere. It's like, find ways to do more, you know, 10 things at once. And, you know, now with AI, you can do 100 things at once. And it's like, great. It's like, we're screwed. It's like, I want to do less. But, you know, it's like we also live within the system. So it's like, And what I really enjoy with our discussion is you understand all this, you live all this, but you also live within the system. And there's that juxtaposition of the two. And that's really the art. And you talk, you know, if you read like Zen Buddhism and Buddhism in general, it's always finding that balance between the extremes and walking between the two. So thank you for sharing all that and sharing your insights and your voice and your work. And I really look forward to just seeing where you're going to go and watching the unfoldment. Where can people find you if they want to connect with you and your work?
Yeah, I have gotten a little bit quieter in the social media space, but I still am somewhat active on Instagram, and that's just I am Lana Shay, and my brand, as I mentioned, is The Pure Way. So if you look for The Pure Way or Lana Shay or The Pure Way with Lana Shay, you'll find me on a bunch of different channels. And then my website is lanashay.com. And then one important project I've been working on is Entheo Ventures, where the management consulting firm that I started with my former partner. So I'm all over the place. But you can easily find me with my name, Lana Shay.
Well, thank you, Lana. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Instagram at leadershipadelics, or stop by my website and say hi at fouyad.com. That's F-O-O-Y-A-D. There's a lot going on, and I'd love to hear from you all, the listeners that tune in every week. And if you have suggestions for future guests, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm there, and I'd love to get more guests on the show. Thank you. Have a great day.